Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6 and Episode 75. In tribute to Joe Green, I will point out that last year he was the second Steeler ever to have his number retired behind Ernie Stotner. Made a little error, brain cramp when we did Episode 70. And today is the anniversary of Super Bowl X. The Steelers' second Super Bowl victory, the one with Lynn Swann's four balletic catches, and the Steelers obviously beating the Dallas Cowboys. And, Dave, maybe that's my way of introing and talking about something positive today, because obviously Steeler Nation reeling a bit from a 23-16 playoff loss in the divisional round to the Denver Broncos yesterday afternoon that ended the 2015 season.
Yeah, I don't know even where to start on this. Disappointing for sure. A game they could have and should have probably won. A game filled early on with quite a few drops and miscues by both offenses. A game in which the Steelers defense, you know, played well for the most part, outside of that, you know, that final Broncos touchdown drive, really, and then the Steelers get the ball back with what, 3 minutes left in a game and a chance to win it still, and really couldn't do it. And who would have known? I guess probably a good place to start is you know, them being without Antonio Brown. Who would have known that really that where they missed Antonio Brown the most was back there fielding punts?
Certainly that was an aspect to it. I don't know if that was a bigger aspect than him being part of the offense. It's kind of hard to guess. Obviously, Martavis Bryant stepped up. Steelers receivers and the Bronco receivers, both teams a ton of drops in this game. But certainly, I don't know if you blame Danny Smith for this or Mike Tomlin for this, but certainly the Steelers didn't have a guy who was, you know, prepared to be a punt returner back there and field footballs. And Marcus Wheaton did a horrible job. I mean, there's no other adjective to describe it. He misfielded probably misplayed probably three of the five punts, I think there were in that game by the Broncos, letting one bounce and not blocking a gunner, fumbling one and muffing another, and also making a dangerous catch on one where he got creamed, but he did a good job to hold on to the ball. So no doubt that didn't help the Steelers. It turned out it didn't hurt the Steelers that much because they didn't turn the ball over. The one he muffed, they actually ended up getting out to the 25, so there were no consequences to that. But, definitely didn't have somebody ready to go to fill in that role.
Yeah, then a little bit of the blame needs to go some on you know, and I understand the wind conditions and all like that, tough conditions there at Mile High. But Jordan Berry didn't have a great game either. And you know, you just look at all you need to do is look at the game book and the starting field position for the Broncos in the first quarter on their three drives. They started their first possession at the Steelers 30. They started their second one at their own 32, and they started their third one at the Steelers 31. And even though the defense, you know, stood tall in all three of those possessions, only allowing the Broncos to run 12 offensive plays, six easy points up on the scoreboard right away.
Yeah, no doubt. The first one was a 42-yard punt return, the longest return against the Steelers on the season. And that followed last week when, you remember, Adam Jones in a crucial situation with the Steelers ahead by whatever the score was, less than the touchdown, giving up a 24-yard return to Adam Jones that set the Bengals up for a TD drive for them to take the lead. Came right back, first punt return, 42 yards. Shamarco Thomas gets blocked out of the play after Ross Ventrone got blocked, looked like a legal block just on his shoulder. Thomas was coming from the other side of the field, couldn't get there, and then Spaeth didn't get there. There was a missed tackle by somebody who's I'm not remembering right at the moment, and then Jordan Berry was a really kind of a poor effort to stick his head in and make the tackle, and the Broncos were in business right there. So, yep, special teams. When I was doing my write-up, Dave, it was I didn't know who to put first because those two guys were clearly vying for the top spot, didn't have good games, and it would be remiss also not to point out that Berry punting from the Steelers' 39-yard line after a delay of game penalty, boomed one 5 yards into the end zone on the fly, maybe the second longest punt of the day when the Steelers absolutely didn't need that. So, yeah, a tough day for those guys on the special team side of things. And really the only positive in special teams, as there wasn't a kickoff return in the game, was Chris Boswell finishing an extraordinarily good season where I think he finished 36-39 and three more field goals in that game yesterday. So special teams certainly a part in it. As you point out, got the Steelers behind in a whole 6-0, but they were able to dig themselves out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Ben Roethlisberger, for all the talk about his shoulder leading up to the game, the Steelers decided not to dress Mike Vick as a number three quarterback. Instead, you can decipher which way who replaced who, but the long and the short of it really was L.J. Fort got the helmet over Mike Vick, obviously for special teams needs, one would think. And because they were without Will Johnson. He, of course, was limited throughout the whole week with a hamstring injury, ended the week listed as questionable. As soon as that Friday injury report came out with both those designations tagged on him, it was obvious he wasn't going to be able to dress and play in that game. So, maybe a bit surprising that Vic didn't play, but I think I think overall at that moment it kind of gave you a comfortable feeling that hey, maybe Ben is a little bit healthier than what we believe he might be. And when he came out opening offensive play and threw the ball, 50 yards in the air downfield, almost like a you better respect this type of throw. I felt pretty good about his health.
By the way, that's exactly what that was. It's if you're going to, just in case you were wondering, here you go. So you don't have to wonder anymore. I can throw it down there. So I think it was exactly that. And the reality is Marcus Wheaton was wide open. I mean, it was, he didn't hit him. It's, those aren't high percentage passes. But he laid it out there and Wheaton was open. And unfortunately they didn't make the play. And you don't sit and say that's a missed touchdown pass, but it's a missed opportunity when they had a chance. So one of many, I mean, really, and I know Steeler fans were lamenting during the game, kind of all the things that, all the mistakes the Steelers made. But just to be fair, let's be reasonable about the number of drops the Broncos had. I know we can probably count the Steelers having 6 or 7, and I'm sure we can get to 6 or 7 maybe in the third quarter for the Broncos because I think they probably had more at the end of the day, drops all over the place.
Absolutely. Maybe a couple of those were, it's hard to tell at TV angle how on target the throw was, but several of those, receivers appeared to get their hands on, the running backs a couple. Thomas dropped one early. Emmanuel Sanders had one go off the end of his hands.
How about the running back coming out of the backfield with, swaths of space in front of him? I think it was C.J. Anderson. Could have been Hillman. I don't remember exactly. On a third down out of the backfield, he dropped it. Fowler dropped a couple. They had drops all over the place.
And the Steelers paid him back a couple, too.
For sure.
So, for sure.
Let's talk about some of these things because let's go back to some of these kind of early in the game here. And I tweeted this just before the Steelers scored. For whatever it's worth, it was very clear to me, kind of mid, early second quarter, late first quarter, early second quarter, the Steelers were the much better team, even though they were down 6-0. I mean, they were the much more dangerous team offensively. You could see it, you know, when they were hitting those passes across the middle of the field. They get Bryant, and then they get Bryant on another kind of toss sweep or end around, whatever you want to call it, when he goes for 40. He just felt like, you know, as you pointed out, Dave, the Broncos had run 12 plays and couldn't do anything. And the Steelers hadn't put up any points yet, but they're getting big chunks of yards, and they have the weapons to do things. And their defense had looked good, even though there were two field goals on the board. It was all special teams. So, you know, early in that game, you could see it for the Steelers. The opportunity was there. And obviously on that second drive, on fourth and one, I really liked the call to go for it. We've talked about this all season long. The Steelers like to take shots deep. So let's talk about what happened on that play. It's clear if you watch Ben, his first look and his first read is to Jesse James in the flat coming out of that left side. And Jesse James is clearly covered. So Ben's, you know, look, you don't have forever to make these decisions, but he has Heath Miller coming from the right side in a shallow cross, going through with another receiver there. So when Ben takes his, if he gets a look at Heath, there are people there. Now, Heath's open because the defender is going with the other receiver coming out of the slot, but it is a crowded area if he's taking just a cursory glance. If he waits half a second, Heath is wide open for an easy first down. But he makes the decision to go deep to Wheaton, and Wheaton's open. Again, there's no, I mean, he is two steps behind, I think it was Tlaib at that point. And Dave, this is one of those, I don't know if you classify it as a drop or not. I didn't really call it a drop when it happened. It did hit him in the chest, could have made the play, and the hands are up kind of in his face. You know, it's one of those things we've talked about all year long. These are the catches that separate the elite receivers from the good receivers. He didn't make it.
And also, you could probably make an argument for some interference on there. Does Antonio Brown get that call?
On that one, I didn't think it was as much.
As Tlaib on Bryant.
Yeah, that was much more egregious. But on that one, I didn't really think that. But did you call it a drop, or do you call it a good defensive play, or how did you care? I mean, it was a little underthrown. He throws it, you know, 3 yards, 4 yards further out there than Tlaib's, you know, then Wheaton's reaching over his shoulder, and Tlaib's either going to pull him down or he has no chance to play the ball.
You asked me an either-or question. The answer is yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was a decent defensive play, and I thought Wheaton probably should have had that.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to what you said originally. You separate the elite receivers to making those kind of what Mike Tomlin likes to call combated catches. Going back and talking about that play again, you know, think about the progression that Roethlisberger is going through, and how the eyes work. You're going to work left to right, right?
Yep.
Jesse was covered out there in the flat. He didn't want that. Eyes scanned left, and he saw Wheaton. Open, and then you're right. You have to make a split decision there. It isn't like, well, hold on, let me see if I can come back to that.
Right.
You know, let me check, see where Heath is at there. You know what aggravates me more than anything, David, when especially with dealing a lot with a lot of people on social media, is everybody always wants to automatically say, man, what a horrible play call that was.
Right.
And as
Ben says every time, if people pay attention, he says, look, every time we go deep on short yardage situations, rest assured, there are a couple of guys going to the sticks. It's there are options there. And the first option, he was looking short. Wasn't open.
Absolutely. You know, I suggest to everybody, I mean, if you can get the $69, $99, whatever it is from grandma or out of your mom's purse or out from underneath the sofa cushions, get yourself that game pass, because in my opinion, nobody has a right to really criticize anything that happens during the game unless they've watched that all 22 or the replay a couple of times, because it gives you a better feel for what happens in certain situations for sure, and the overall play and the routes and everything that goes along with that. So a lot of people are probably, and I thought Alex Cazor laid this out perfectly in his column this morning, talking about how Mike Tomlin was reasonable to go for those, you know, the decisions that he made instead of going for the field goals on those key fourth downs there. We don't know what the wind was in that situation on that fourth and one. And also, I mean, you're talking about fourth and one, not fourth and 11 in that situation. A 49-yard field goal wasn't a chip shot at that point. And I don't know if you caught what Troy Rank posted on
Twitter. I actually think Alex might have gotten that for me because I actually put that up there right when Troy posted it. And, yeah, when McManus says it's the worst wind I've ever kicked in, that's his home stadium, and he's a guy with a huge leg, it certainly gives some credence to the idea of not doing it. Now, Dave, I have two different thoughts on this. One is I loved it in the first quarter going for fourth down on that fourth and one. And I don't know what you said on Twitter at the time. I'm imagining that you thought it was an okay call to go for it.
Yeah, absolutely, I did.
I didn't like it on the second one because it wasn't a fourth and one. It was a fourth and ten, if they or fourth and whatever it was. What was that? I can't remember exactly. But they were on the 24, and they obviously took the delay of game penalty, so there was not going to be any choice there. I thought when they went up to the line, you know, maybe they'd try and draw them off. They went from the 34 to the 39. So I didn't like it in the second situation. So, you know, I have a split view on it. First quarter's, you know, a game down 3-0, I think, three nothing, I think it was at the time. No problem. Fourth quarter, 13-12 lead, and the game on the line, I have a different view of it. And I think the answer is also that wind picked up in the first quarter, probably around the time they were making that first decision, and it died down, at least from what I've been told by people who were there. And again, people who were there not on the sideline or could be completely wrong on this as well. So, you know, I thought the game situation for me was I'm good with it, and then I wasn't good with it. So, he had two decisions. I liked one. I didn't like the other.
Wouldn't that last one have been 51?
Yeah, I think it was from the 34. So, yeah, 51-ish, yep.
Into the wind.
Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, into the wind never seemed to be a factor for anybody kicking off or doing anything. I think it was as much a crosswind as anything from what I could tell. But, again, neither of us are on the sideline, so we're kind of guessing.
Right, and that's dangerous to do, right?
Sure. I mean, look, we're giving our opinion, so.
I mean, obviously Mike Tomlin did not have the comfort in that situation to go with him. And maybe Bart Scott – did you hear Bart Scott on CBS prior to the game – just pretty much put the game on the kickers and says Mike Tomlin doesn't have confidence in his kicker, where the Broncos have confidence in McManus.
Well, I don't know what the maybe Bart Scott looks smart, but when a guy's 36 for 39 in the year, I don't know how you don't have confidence in him.
Exactly. That's why 99.9% of the people on Twitter were laughing at that comment.
I mean, I assume Bart Scott's most recent memory of the Steeler kicker is watching the Steelers-Ravens game in Pittsburgh when Scobie missed a couple.
Yeah, he probably doesn't even know who Chris Boswell is.
You know what? I would bet $5 this very second if we could find Bart Scott and say, name a Steeler kicker. I bet he couldn't do it.
I bet immediately after that interview, I bet he knows now. But but that's why those experts make those quote unquote experts.
The big bucks, yeah.
The big bucks, right?
All right, so we got that Tomlin thing out of the way. So were you in agreement? You liked him going for it the first time, and then what did you think the second time?
I was fine with the situation to punt, and also, and Alex points this out in his column this morning. Jordan Berry coming into that game was considered the best pin deep punter this season.
Yeah, that's one of those stats that who gets the most opportunities and that type of Berry's
well,
Berry's been pretty
good
at it.
One touchback in 28 opportunities.
Yeah, 28 opportunities, right? Of what is that, inside the 50 or?
Yeah, I'll have to read back on what the.
It's a very good percentage, obviously.
Right, right.
And he did it beautifully one time in the game.
Right. So, heck of a time to have your second one.
Yeah, he just, he had a rough day. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. He's going to, I'd be shocked if the Steelers are on their fourth different punter to start the season next year. They've gone through a lot of punters, and I would imagine Jordan Berry is going to be back. So, we're not throwing Fitz Toussaint out. We're not throwing Jordan Berry out. So, All right, Dave, so let's get into the offense. And Ben, as you talked about, I don't know that it's a big surprise. I did a couple of interviews over the weekend and said, you know, I don't know if Ben's going to be 85%. He's not going to be 100%, but I don't. He's sure as heck not going to be 60%. Turns out Ben was probably 90, 95%, right? I'm sure he wasn't 100%, but, you know, nobody's going to be 100%. But it didn't seem like the injury was impactful at all. We can walk away from that as being a reason the Steelers lost, right?
Right, right, absolutely. I would say anywhere from 80 to 90%, and after he took that sack and was slammed on that shoulder, showed no ill effects of that. And Mike Tomlin was asked about it after the game, says shoulder wasn't an issue, and really they never even talked about it after kickoff. And going back to what we originally talked about with Vic not dressing, I think that's proof positive that they were fairly confident that he was going to hold up okay. And, you know, remember Melody writing about this earlier in the week on Steelers Depot as well, too. Almost a carbon copy of 2008 after Mario Williams got a hold of Ben a couple of times in that game. Ben supposedly suffered the same type injury, comes out the next week against the Cleveland Browns in a game that was also full of wind and showed no ill effects, even threw one, I forget what it was, 45, 50 yards down the field to San Antonio Holmes in that game. So almost a carbon copy of the type of you know, arm strength and play and everything that goes along with that coming off of that injury. So next time Ben suffers a sprained AC joint with a couple of torn ligaments, we won't spend much time on it.
Right. I mean, you know, as it was pointed out to me during the week, if he had torn the ligaments, his collarbone would have been up around his ear, and, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So, okay, so Ben, you know, look, he played pretty well. Again, he wasn't. I don't think he was great. He missed some throws. He missed another throw to Wheaton over the middle. That was I don't know what happened on that one because it was his worst throw of the game. Do you remember the play I'm talking about, Dave? Wheaton was kind of wide open on a cross in the middle of the field and Ben threw it, you know, 5 yards away from him.
Here's something else to think about in that arm strength. Ben was 4 of 7 on passes thrown more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage, with a two other throws, not counting in that 4 of 7, drawing pass interference calls. So technically, I guess you could say 6 of 9 on passes thrown more than 15 yards downfield. That's his best deep ball stats in, what, 5 weeks? Four weeks?
Yeah, I mean, certainly of the last, going back to the Denver game, really, is where you'd go. And
against a Broncos defense that's been good defending the deep pass all year. Now, they did play a lot of zone yesterday. I found that kind of surprising. And that's probably because AB wasn't in there.
Yeah, and here's one point about that, whether it's worth it or not to make a big deal about that. Two of those plays did come on the very last drive within the last minute. The 22-yard pass interference to Wheaton and the 22-yard pass that was complete. That Martavis Bryant made a hell of a catch when he got dumped on his back. So, you know, 4 for 7 with two PIs would be 3 for 6 with one PI. You know, it's still good, but something to take into consideration in terms of a little bit of garbage time stuff there.
Let me reverse field real quick and give you one of those stat book or game book hunting. If I would have told you,
yeah.
If I would have told you the Steelers had 8 explosive plays in the game and the Broncos had 3 and Peyton Manning did not throw a touchdown pass in the game, who won the game?
Yeah, and if I had said the Steelers lost the turnover battle 1-0, who won the game? Those two would have canceled each other out for me if I gave you both of them.
Well, you know, the talk stat says you take explosive plays, you'll find that differential, and you find the differential between turnover battle, and if you're +2 or greater, you're going to win the ball game 80% or 80% of the time.
Which is about exactly what the turnover stat is. Win a turnover battle, you win about 80% of the time.
So the Steelers had, eight explosive plays. The Broncos had three. That's a positive of five.
Does that count penalties, by the way? Like a PI penalty, does that count?
No, you know, I have tried to track that before. To me, it's kind of, I tracked that one season, and really it's kind of negligible, I think. Insignificant, I think, I didn't find the percentage to go up or down, on a complete season. As far as you're talking about explosive penalties, right?
Yes.
I didn't find that in the long haul to alter the 80% stat.
Yeah.
On attack. So
yeah. Okay. So the Steelers had one long PI. I don't think maybe two long PIs. I don't think the Broncos had any. So that would make that stat potentially even kind of 10-3.
Just as it is, I think the Steelers ended plus four in the tots, and it's disappointing. There's not many times when a team throughout an entire NFL season of all those games that you will find a team with a tots of plus four or greater losing a ball game.
Now, I'm trying to think of the Broncos' explosive plays. They had the 34-yard run from their own kind of 5-yard line by C.J. Anderson that set up a field goal. They had the 31-yard pass on 3rd and 12 on the final drive, the touchdown drive that won them the game to Benny, what's his name, Flower, whatever his name is. And then what was the third one? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Don't you remember? Peyton Manning?
Oh, geez, the slide.
The give up?
Yeah.
To Emmanuel Sanders?
Yeah, what'd they get on that play? 25?
34.
34, geez. So all of their explosive plays were 30.
30 or more, yep. And, I've thought in the past, trying to, me and even though I'm bad at math, I love numbers. Figuring in, double explosive plays, if a team has a double explosive play, should that count as two explosive plays? Because, let's face it, it's a heck of a chunk of yardage. And if you're not scoring on drives that you have at least, two explosive plays or a double explosive play on, something's really wrong with your medulla oblongata. But, three 30 or more. So, I've thought about kind of doctoring and playing with that explosive play stat for future reference. Should that count as 1.5 explosive plays when you get 31 to 38 or 39 and what the percentage of wins? Because obviously, but look at this, though. The Steelers had three double explosive plays or more, and they almost had one triple explosive play on that pass to Darius Hayward Bay in the second quarter.
Let me jump in on that play because I was just thinking about it. Darius Hayward Bay should have scored, shouldn't he?
Yeah, he should have.
I mean, I hate to criticize somebody for getting open and going for 58 yards, but he's got to beat that defensive back clean, and if he does, it's a touchdown. And I think he could have gone – look, we're sitting watching on TV. He's got to make decisions. Okay, we all get it. Otherwise, if that's the basis we have to do things, we'll never talk about anything. So we're watching. I think he could have cut it left, or he could have gone hard right, and he beats him either way. And he kind of went angled right. And I just thought it was the wrong choice, but really they ended up getting a field goal on that, and I felt like that was a crucial play right there.
You know what though? That was Bradley Roby that got him, right?
Yeah.
What was it with Bradley Roby? 4.39? 40?
Oh, he's a fast dude, but he's running backwards to start.
Sometimes when they tell you long speed sometimes doesn't matter, how many times does a guy ask to run 40 yards?
Yeah.
Well, it does matter. That's one of them.
He should have scored. I mean, really, he should have scored.
Yeah, I think so too. And when we talk about when we try to sell the team keeping Darius Hayward Bay, sometimes what is the one thing that we always comes up as a selling point with Darius Hayward Bay?
Well, he's a great special teams player. He's a good special teams player, and he's best Steelers run blocker from the wide receiver position. Aside from the fact that he's got speed to keep up with the other four guys.
Right, speed's usually one of those three things that we talk about. Oh, or we usually end it. Oh, yeah, he's fast.
Yeah,
you know, So that one definitely kind of hurt. Let's get to the
kid, Sammy.
Oh man, outside of maybe some questionable route running, which you're going to see in a player like that, drifting and not good cuts. What a game for him.
Yeah.
Here's 20 something snaps.
We had the conversation 10 or 15 and I was kind of on the high side of that, but I wasn't at 25.
I never would have guessed. If you would have told me he played 25 snaps in that game, I'm telling you, somebody got injured.
Yeah. And, we saw – let me ask you, should he have done better going down that sideline? Should he have cut that one back like Martavis Bryant did earlier in the season? Cut that inside and he's gone.
Yeah, I'm trying to visualize that. I'll have to take a longer look at that, David. But, I mean, geez. I mean, props to tip your cap to Todd Haley for getting him involved, in that game.
And I'll say one thing that – you know, our listeners probably, some of the info that we get access or I get access to that maybe obviously they don't is, talking to some of the guys over the course of the last 6 weeks, and you never know whether to believe this because I heard it about a guy like Rob Blanchflower last year. I occasionally ask guys how practice squad guys are doing or how guys who don't dress are doing. And obviously for anybody watching practice on a daily basis, the only guys you really get a sense for are the skilled position guys and the guys catching the ball. And Blanchflower was a tight end, seventh-round pick last year out of UMass, who got cut this year in training camp. And then they were talking about Coates, and guys were just like, he is a beast. He is big and fast. He's really a beast. He's been running through the defense in practice. You never know whether to take that with a grain of salt or not. And whether you like the broadcasters or not, I think one of the comments early in the game was, we've never heard such effusive praise for a player who has had one catch on the season. Talking about the coaching staff, talking about Sammy Coates going into that game, they had a lot of positive things to say for him. And boy, Dave, just to look forward for half a second, that receiving core next year is going to be unbelievable if Coates develops at all because, they're just not going to have enough room on the field for all the guys.
And he was only targeted three times in the game and had two catches for 61 yards. But, we got a sampling of tape. And this is an unfair comparison, but it's kind of what jumped in my head with watching him two times after the game, two times back through the tape. Look, this is very unfair, but it's kind of what pops up in your head. Larry Fitzgerald-like.
I think he's faster, bigger, and faster.
But can you kind of see, it's very unfair. And don't run around saying, boy, Dave Bryant's saying Sammy Coates is the next Larry Fitzgerald. That's not what I'm saying. But there are some traits there. Now, obviously, if he develops more as a run blocker and all like that. Now, am I saying he's going to become Larry Fitzgerald? Absolutely not. But it kind of going back in my mind to Larry Fitzgerald's early days, That's the first thing that kind of popped in my mind.
Phil Simms jumped on my Randy Moss, Martavis Bryant comparison.
You weren't the first one to do that.
Yes, I was the first one to do that.
No, you were not.
I absolutely was.
No, you were not. Stop it. You were talking about it after people were talking about it.
No. This is a year ago I was doing this.
He's been compared to Randy Moss like coming out of college.
All right, you document that for me. Go ahead.
I'll find it somewhere.
Find it coming out of college, and I'll give it to you. All right, so Coach does his thing. The Steelers, they go into halftime in this game. It's 10-9, feeling reasonably good about things. Defense first half, great, right? I mean, really solid work, with the help from the Denver drops. But you're feeling good at halftime, right?
I can't remember how much Xanax I had in me. 10-9. I mean, how good can one feel? I was comfortable with the fact that it looked like every time Peyton Manning tried to throw the football, he was hurting one of the gonads. You know, it looked like he's just putting everything that he could into every throw. It looked like he was struggling to throw the ball 7 yards to the sideline. The drops, I knew the drops were a little bit in the Steelers' favor, that the Steelers got away with a few. But, you know, I thought they played the run excellent for the most part. Oh, boy, Stephon Tuitt, is that a baby monster or what?
I had an unbelievable guy. You know, I couldn't tell if they wanted to run right because they liked Velasquez and Schofield on that side, or they wanted to stay away from Cam Hayward, but they kept running right, and Stephon Tuitt kept setting the edge, and they kept blowing it up.
Boy, those arms, he really were. And even so, you know, we're talking about how decent they were against the run in that first half. They still had 65 rushing yards in the first half, and I forgot to go back and look at this a little bit closer. I will on the All-22. 34 of those 65 first half rushing yards was that run by C.J. Anderson. And to me, I immediately after that play was run, I popped on Twitter. Looked like Steve McClendon was tackled.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know,
by the center, and that's what opened that up like the Red Sea.
Yeah, I don't know what's his name, Paredes or something like that. You look at it. I mean, he's got his hand outside McClendon's right shoulder. He's got his left arm outside, and they both go down that direction. And, you know, Shazier had just made a really good play on the prior play on first down. This was second down, and he was just a half second late filling the hole there. And McClendon, you know, McClendon goes down. If he just is able to stay on his feet, he gets another stride there, and that hole's not nearly as big as it was.
That has to be the single longest run the Steelers have given up this year with Steve McClendon on the field.
Well, that would be a good stat to know. I mean, that was a 2nd-and-9 play from their own 6, and you know the Broncos got a field goal out of that drive, so that was a significant play in that game.
I will tell you this. I mean, and you know how explosive plays can really, really alter yards per rush, but average rush with Steve McClendon on the field during the regular season was
1.6.
2.31 yards per carry when Steve McClendon was on the field, average yards per rush this year. 2.31. That's the lowest of any defensive player that played considerable amount of snaps.
Is it 60 plays? Is it 30 plays? How many is that? Do you know?
Oh, it's more. I mean, obviously, I think it's more than 60. I'll have to pull that total.
Because you just wonder how many of those are kind of third and fourth and ones and goal line situations where.
Right, there weren't many of those. I mean, you know, talking about you know, were there a handful of them? Yeah, but I mean, I don't think you're talking about 20 goal line snaps in those situations. I've got nothing but time now.
Yeah, right. We've got time.
to cobble that together.
So
for
the
you.
Steelers, you know, they start the second half. They get the hold. You know, again, a good play to start the half, and then the Steelers get the field goal, and this is where the, you know, Heath Miller over the middle on a 1st-and-10. It definitely looks like there could be a pass interference call with Marshall draped on his back. And then obviously the play that 3rd-and-5 from the 10 that people will point to in terms of big calls. Martavis goes up, and we can debate whether you should make the call or not, but there's no debating that there's contact early by Tlaib. I mean, he's got his arm wrapped around him.
Yeah, absolutely. Tlaib got the call there for sure. I think it was around halftime, or no, it was after halftime. Immediately after that happened, I was trying to think, go back in my head, how many pass interference calls has Martavis drawn so far during his career?
Oh, I'll bet this year he's had 3 or 4, not more than that. You know, I remember a couple long balls where he got grabbed early. I don't know to your point, I don't remember very many challenged catches that he's gotten a call. I remember.
What about end zone?
Yeah, no, I don't. He didn't, you know, he didn't get that one in the
Cincinnati game with Kirkpatrick on him.
Yeah, that was the one laid out in the right sideline. And then what was the one where he had to go back over his left shoulder? Is that the Ravens game? at home, the Steelers lost, on a deep ball that would have been a tough catch. I'm drawing a blank. How many games did the Steelers lose at home this year? They lost to the Ravens?
They lost to the Ravens. They lost to the Bengals at home, right?
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of the Cincinnati game. Yeah, so those two games. No question that's the case. You know, we talk about him making tough catches, and you know, we didn't see a lot of that in the second half of the season, and he certainly didn't get any breaks on calls.
No, he didn't. And once you start earning a little bit, you know, respect, I think you start get some of those. And why? I wonder how many. While we're kind of talking about it, I wonder how many times during the regular season that Aqib Talib was penalized. If you give me just a minute, I'll have those for you real quick here. Talib led the Broncos this year with 10 penalties during the regular season. He was called pass interference 1, 2, 3, 4 times. Defensive holding 1, 2, 2 times. And had 10 total penalties.
I know he had at least one unsportsmanlike conduct personal foul for the eye
went unnecessary use of the Three Stooges eye poke.
Exactly.
I mean, look, you got a referee standard, and you don't want this thing to get too ticky-tack at times, right? You know, where every pass thrown down the field is drawing a pass interference call. But, man, the receiver's got to have a chance to catch the football according to the rules.
Yeah, so a couple of things. Let me just get your thoughts here on kind of big-picture stuff. So Ben's performance, a B?
B-.
Yeah, B-. I mean, took sacks at big times. One was on that drive after the Darius Hayward Bay. Now, look, that guy came free in about half a second, so not much to say about that. And then the other two sacks are obviously at the end of the game where you can say he's got to throw it. If there's nobody open, it's, you know, it's one of those things. You got to. I think generally Steeler fans trust Ben's judgment, and if you want to call him coverage sacks, call him coverage sacks. But there was one where he didn't have a chance. And then the other two, he held on the ball for a long time late in the game. So those were the three sacks that he gave that he was responsible for. I think he missed a couple throws. The first throw of the game, the one to Wheaton over the middle. But I don't remember too many others that he flat missed on the throws. And he made some, you know, one of the a drop by Heath was a perfect throw that he got past the linebacker. I'd say B minus B. I would say Peyton was kind of at best. You know, at best a C,
probably a C minus for Peyton.
Yeah, throwing the ball was not good. He obviously didn't get any help from his receivers either. In terms of their ratings, if anybody cares about that stuff, passer rating, Ben was 94.3, Peyton was 74.4. QBR, Ben was 53.2, Peyton was 35.9. I'll venture to say that you're not going to see too many games in today's day and age, in the playoffs, where both quarterbacks throw zero touchdowns and zero interceptions, and I these two guys in particular, you would never have bet on that at the start of this season if they met that would be the case. But I think, you know, both teams were concerned about their quarterbacks turning the ball over, and I think this is the first start of the year that Peyton didn't turn the ball over in a game he started, and obviously for Ben, it's been a while since he's gone a game without throwing an interception. And I guess the best chance of all, Dave, and there wasn't – I don't remember many Ben's passes where I said – were there anywhere you said that should have been picked?
Seemed like there was one, right?
Yeah, there was one. I'm trying to remember. And obviously on Peyton's side, there was one clear one. And by the way, Will Gay did not drop this ball. It was a great play by Manny Sanders to get a hand in. And look, Will Gay's not a trained receiver. Maybe he comes back to the ball a step earlier. Maybe he gets his hands out further. But Manny Sanders' hand was right there to break it up.
Yeah, a great play by him. Cherry picking this the game book here some more. 6.7 yards for the Steelers, average gain per offensive play. Yeah. Not shabby at
4.9
all.
4.9 for Denver, right?
4.6,
right.
Yeah, I mean, geez, you want to talk about you definitely that was a very Alex Smith-type number for the Broncos right there. The thing that really, really pops out at you, Steelers, 2 of 12 on third downs, 0-for-2 on fourth downs. You might as well factor those numbers in as well too. So 2-of-14 on must have downs for the Steelers.
Yeah, and let's point out the Bengals were 3-of-16, so you know they were no better.
Right, the Broncos.
I'm sorry, I did this all week. Sorry about that.
And total net yards, the Steelers, you know, had them by about, 60 or so, 396 to 324 there. The Broncos, had more rushing yards, and I think third, you know, a lot of it has to do with that 30, yarder.
But Steelers had better rushing yards per attempts, 4.5 to 3.3.
Sure. You can't help but keep going back to the field position thing here with the Broncos and how you really, really gave them six unnecessary points there in the first quarter.
And the turnover.
Right. And the turnover. The Broncos' average starting field position was their own 36. The Steelers' average of 20. The Steelers only started, let's see, 3-4 offensive possessions outside, you know, on the positive side of their own 20, and 1-2 times they started inside their own 10, whereas Denver only started inside their own 10 once. You hate to keep going back to that, but I mean, you really did give them easy 6 points in that game early. I mean, it's like spotting a team 6 points, really, in those situations. The big, I tell you what was also kind of a dagger play, was that play, Fowler, the big 30 yarder,
yeah,
right?
Third and 12 where, Boykin's not quite there in time. Will Allen misses the tackle. That was a huge play from the Denver 33. You got, you know, 8 minutes left in the game, 7 minutes left in the game, whatever it was. And it's a third and 12. And the Broncos, you know, as we talked about, they weren't converting third downs. And the game's on the line for them right there, to some degree. I mean, you look at it, there were 8:37 left in the game, and according to Ray Fittipaldo, Brandon Boykin got the defensive play call just a tad late and wasn't in perfect position, and Fowler had some drops. I mean, the guy didn't do any, you know, he didn't do much the entire game. His numbers at the end of the game, he just finished with 2 catches for 35 yards. He was targeted 4 times, and he had 2 clear drops on the other 2 targets. But, you know, you want to point to specific plays, I go fumble first, and that's probably play, you know, we can talk about the pass interference call. You can talk about Darius Heyward-Bey not scoring on the 58-yarder. But that play and the 34-yard run and some of the special teams plays, those are the games. You know, you can, if you get to pick 8 plays in any football game, you can decide it right there.
Yeah, that was a 3rd and 12 play, 8:37 left. No guarantee. I mean, obviously Denver's going to get the ball. You know, if you stop them there, they're going to have to punt. But they were at their own 33. You know, if it's an incomplete pass or only gaining 3 yards, they're going to be punting. The Steelers are going to probably get the ball back. Who knows? Around their 20, somewhere around in there. And that was just a huge play in the Steelers' defense.
And the Steelers would have the lead still, 13-12.
Right, and the Steelers never really recovered from that play forward, you know, obviously from the fumble forward, but that play happened like 5 or 6 plays after the fumble. The Steelers never really recovered from that point forward. And how big, you know, it might seem insignificant, but on 2nd and 7, after they connected with Fowler, you know, James Harrison jumps into the neutral zone. And that's, you know, you're setting up a very manageable down and distance for the Broncos on 2nd and 2. At that point, they obviously got the first down, and then they just kept marching right there. Peyton Manning got better at deciphering and checking to things as the game wore on.
And
that's
he
why
checked into the run. You know, after that play, the 31-yarder, they ran the ball 8 of 9 plays the rest of that drive. And, you know, the Steelers' run defense was really good until then. And that, you know, there they go. They go. He checks into that, sees what he wants, runs it 8 to 9 times. Not only gets the touchdown, but chews up, you know, 4 more minutes clock.
And Mike Tomlin kind of addressed that in the post game, right? Talking about having to gamble more in that situation.
Yeah, I don't know if they had to gamble there. You're ahead and you're just trying to hold them to a field goal. They couldn't. I'm just taking a look here if they had to convert any more third downs after that play. Yeah, they had, well, the third and goal, you know, when they went up and played fast against the Steelers. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think the Steelers necessarily should have used the timeout there, but Peyton got it up to the one, got him up there. And Boykin had a chance to make a play behind the line of scrimmage. It's a tough tackle on a bigger back and couldn't do it.
They converted 2 third downs on that scoring drive and had 3 third down conversions a game, right?
Yeah, they got the third and 12 and the third and goal.
So circle that drive, right?
Yeah, that drives the game for sure. No doubt about it. And they did it on the ground. And Peyton, you know, we saw them do it against San Diego. You know, you can ask the question, but there's not going to be an answer to it. But altitude, did that play a part? You know, the Steelers' defense, they get tired at all. Again, we see very, you know, almost no rotation on the D-line for Tuitt and Hayward. They played almost every snap of the game. You know, so, you know, those are the things you can ask questions about that, you know, we can't really give you answers to. But certainly that was the drive that was the key. And then the Steelers, after getting 18 yards on the first play with Martavis Bryant to get, you know, to get a start on a drive to win the game, they do nothing. And then the timeout, again, I'll say this, and we talk about it all the time, and people, you know, when I think things are black and white, people don't think sometimes they are. And there are people who think this was black and white. I don't think it was. I had no problem with them taking the timeout at, you know, 2:22. But you sure as hell better get more than one playoff, you know, after that time. I mean, that's the thing. They get it off. They complete a pass for 2 yards, and they don't get another playoff in 21 seconds, and they get to the two-minute warning, which the reason obviously it's important is if the drive gets stopped, you're going to need the time on the backside. So did it determine the outcome of the game? No.
See, I don't think that way. I'm thinking of it as this is it. I don't think of it, well, what if we fail?
No, but still, what if you fail? I said, starting the drive, you know, this is probably it too. And you got 3 timeouts and the 2-minute warning. So time is not a problem at all, but they made it a problem by going really slow again. And so even at that point, even if it didn't matter, they came out of that. They get, you know, 3rd and 5 at their 43. They're past the 2-minute warning and they're past 1 timeout and they're down a score. So you got to score. So it starts to, you know.
I tell you what I would like to see next season, and I think we talk about this every off season with the Steelers and Roethlisberger. I would like to see them really change tempo several times during the game.
Yes, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. We see the Patriots are able to do it like nobody else, but you got to be able to play faster than they play at times.
And it's good practice for when you actually need it, too.
Yep.
You know, and I realize you do it during practice and yada, yada, but you know, I would like to see them be able to shift into overdrive and downshift and all like that.
Did we see them try to play fast at all yesterday?
I can't remember saying that I do, right?
No, I don't remember any no huddle or any kind of, you know, maybe one play or two, but, I mean, we saw Peyton do it after he slid, I mean, for obvious reasons, wanted to get up there and not have it challenged. Obviously, it couldn't be challenged. By the way, I mean, there's nothing to say about that play, right? Other than the refs basically missed it and you can't challenge it. So,
well, I think that definitely needs to be looked at by the competition committee, right?
Because then you're putting the QB at risk if you say, you know, you can't.
Right. What if James Harrison would have popped him on the ground?
Yeah, he slides, he's down, and Harrison doesn't know whether he's touched or not, so he goes diving in.
15 yards
for sure.
And a fine.
All right, so we got you know, not much time left here, Dave. Let's talk about we've talked about a lot of the offensive guys, but let's talk in general. Linebackers, one of their best games of the year, right? Harrison, his best game of the year?
Boy, he was brutal against the run, wasn't he? And he, you know, that's kind of been his calling card too.
Brutal as in good or bad?
Yeah, brutal as in good.
I should have said beasting.
Yeah. As was Jarvis Jones against the run.
Obviously, Moats out, hardly played. He got hurt in the first quarter, was in street clothes, didn't come back. It was interesting to see the snaps. It was Harrison and Dupuis. Jarvis had a lot of the snaps in the first half. He didn't have nearly as many in the second half.
Right.
So those guys, I thought the linebackers played well in that game. I thought, you know, as a group, they played well. I thought the defense generally played well. I mean, I'm not looking at one guy and saying they had a bad game. I'm not looking at anybody saying they were bad defensively.
And that, you know, look, we're not talking about Antoine Blake today, right?
Nope, we didn't talk about him last week either.
Right, but nobody's gonna remind anybody of that, are they?
No, he was better in the playoffs for sure. Now I was surprised they didn't go after him more.
Now they did. They did throw. Thomas up underneath.
That 18-yarder gave him a big cushion. Up, you know,
right.
It's gonna happen.
Right,
you're gonna get some passes completed.
Right, exactly. Can you imagine if Antoine Blake would have been the one to give up the play to Fowler, the 31-yard play to Fowler there on that final scoring drive?
Yeah, you know.
As I wrote on Twitter, there's not enough pitchforks in the Yenzerville Walmart.
How about Will Allen's game? He was the designated blitzer, and he came, you know, four or five times, I think. He obviously got to Peyton the one time just a quarter of a second late, or he has a strip sack. Peyton never saw him on that play. He just misses him on the one where Peyton slides, and there are one or two where he was really close and didn't get there, and he also missed some tackles. I mean, you know, his game was up and down.
How many times have we talked about Will Allen, though, as smart a player as he is, he plays his best football in the box.
In the box, for sure. He is way better close to the line of scrimmage.
So has that ship sailed?
You know, I've been saying that this season. I will say, you know, Will did some good things later in the season that are impressive. But, man, you'd hope to find a younger guy who could be a little more consistent. His tackling wasn't good enough. I thought he was a good designated blitzer. I mean, if next year he and Robert Golden were to shift roles and Golden could step in and start and you keep Allen, but I guess he'd rather have a younger guy than Will Allen. I assume he and Harrison are not going to be back. But we'll get into that next week. The offensive line, Dave, how did you think they played?
I thought overall well. I mean, look, Alejandro Villanueva got beat a couple of times. Gilbert gave up a key sack in a key situation as well, too. Got beat, what, to the inside, right?
He did. Is that the face mask call?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
And that, what a huge penalty that was. You know, so as a whole, though, I mean, look, you can't pin this thing on the offensive line.
No, three sacks is acceptable, with one of them being kind of that fourth down play, and one of them where, you know, I don't know if it was Villanueva who got beat or Gilbert who got beat on the first sack in the drive they had to settle for a field goal. But as a whole, I think the offensive line had a good year.
I do too. Most definitely. For all the problems Cody Wallace had, penalties and giving up sacks. I mean, he filled it. Look, the line played good enough to be talking about them possibly be playing in the AFC Championship game right now. So, you know, next man up mentality at two positions. You know, Matthew Marks, he posted this on Twitter last night. If I would have told you, after Bell went down, that the Steelers eventually would be, you know, would you give him a chance?
Yeah.
With Villanueva, with Wallace, with
sure.
Not having Bell, without having, you know, Yachty, and go on and on. You'd probably shoot somebody for telling you that they would you know, were really 3 or 4 minutes away from playing in the AFC Championship game. So
one last one.
That's not an excuse. It is what it is.
One last one for you. I had no problem. The Steelers ran the ball three state times with the ball on the 5-yard line. I didn't bother me a bit. People I know, Twitter blew up with the conservative play calling. You had a funny line saying, "Here come the Steelers offensive coordinators." Do you have any problem with three straight run plays there?
No.
All right, we're in the minority. All right, well, you know, we haven't talked at all about the offseason, where things go from here. I think we've kind of covered everything that happened in the game. The Steelers played well enough to win. They gave up a couple big plays at crucial times. They turned the ball over once. And the defense in the playoffs, in the two playoff games, the Steelers scored 34 points, and they gave up 27 in the fourth quarter. And 16-3 last week, and 11-3 this week. And I don't know if you want, you know, the defense. The defense played well in both these games, but couldn't get the big play when they needed it in this one, like they did against the Bengals after giving up three scores. And the offense just didn't do enough in the red zone or on third downs in either game to be impressive enough to win them both. So that's why they're going home, and that's why Denver's playing hosting New England.
And Denver's going to get smoked, right?
I would think they get smoked. Although, you know, their defense is good enough that, you know, potentially that, you know, maybe they don't lose. Maybe they lose by 10 and not 20.
Yeah, we'll talk more about what else happened over the course of the divisional weekend on the Wednesday show there. I guess we should start winding it down here. Shout out to Nicholas Chambers for the donation. Patrick Brophy for the donation. Sean Kirchhoffer for the donation. Dustin Huber, Steve English, Frank Carl, thank you for donating to the show and the cause. Thanks to my guys at Steelers Depot, all of them. They know who they are. Great job this year. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to the show this year. We're not going anywhere, but we're going to be start kind of getting in a different mode here moving forward. David, thanks for your hard work during the regular season as well, too. And you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to wrap up the year, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button on the top right-hand side. David, get us out of here.
As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.